The role of women in the energy sector is not to be underestimated, nor is their contribution to multi-million dollar utilities across Africa. During this Women in Energy podcast series, we're going to be talking with a number of leading women in Africa's power sector, showcasing their influence, the unique elements they bring to their jobs, and provide a little insight into the woman behind the title.
My name is Dola Popoyi. I'm what we call the transactions lawyer, and I have been doing this for over 10 years as a transactions lawyer. I've been doing this for over 16 years, but my specialty is in energy and infrastructure, and I've done that over 10 years. I'm very passionate about energy access and how we can get energy into homes and businesses across Africa through sustainable, you know, funding models. I'm married, I have two children, and I'm also very passionate about women and the value that they can bring to organizations.
Dilapa, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and for being part of the Women in Energy podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire. It's a pleasure to be here.
I do have to ask, I mean, you have a very specific focus when it comes to the kind of law that you practice. And I was wondering, first of all, if you could give just a little bit of background, how you got to where you are. But then also, if you could perhaps delve a little bit into how you got into the situation when you started advising on infrastructure and also the regulatory frameworks in the Nigerian power sector.
Thanks, Claire. So in terms of my background and how I got here, well, I think my first response would be I got here step by step. It's been a long journey. So my background is law, and my education was in Nigeria, secondary school, university, I went to University of Ibadan, premier university in Nigeria. And after university, I decided I didn't want to do law and that I wanted to do something around client service. But because I didn't see how law and client or customer service came together. And then I decided that I wanted to take a gap year and do something else, because ordinarily I should have gone to law school and do something else. I think I was a little bit disillusioned, but I don't know. I thought I would do something else and do something that puts me face to face with clients and customers in some way. And it happened that in the UK, the only opportunities I got were law. So I did immigration law in the UK for a year and a half and decided to come back to Nigeria to do law school. That stint was it was fundamental for me because it then shaped what it was, the area of law, in terms of broad area of law I wanted to do. I knew that I didn't have the temperament for litigation. In Nigeria, you can practice as a litigator and as a commercial or transactions lawyer. So you can do, like in the UK, you are either a barrister or a solicitor. In in Nigeria, you can be both. And at the time I started practicing law, you know, what we call full service law firms were more the norm than people who did just solicitor's work. But I had done a year and a half of just doing solicitor's work, and that had kind of shaped the foundation for me. So I came back to Nigeria, did law school, and was very certain I wasn't going to be involved in adversarial law. And I then fortunately got the opportunity at Detail Commercial Solicitors. At that time, Ayilijemde, who is the founder of the firm and lead partner, was starting out in Lagos. He had been doing a full service firm out of Port Harcourt for a number of years and decided to branch out into, you know, full service, into corporate commercial law specifically, which was niche, mm-hmm. you know, at the time. And I got the opportunity to start there with him. So I started with doing commercial law, and my basis is commercial law, anything around transactions, corporate restructuring, and all of that. And we also started to look at new practice areas, and one of them was the power sector. And I got in the power sector, you know, in the course of work. So we got the opportunity to work for the Nigeria Electricity Regulatory Commission. At that time, they were setting up structure for what we have now, which is a largely privatized, you know, energy sector, or would I say power sector. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were we were helping them with their, in terms of due diligence, with bidders, people who were basically looking at getting generation licenses. We're also helping them with setting up the contractual framework for transmission in Nigeria. And that kind of gave us the basis to be able to start off and give us the foundation to understand what the structure, the market structure, the legal regulatory framework was going to be like going forward. And I was fortunate to be part of that process. And a year, 2 years later, Nigeria as a country went into a very ambitious, you know, privatization program. Mm. And we were fortunate to have been positioned to be able to advise, you know, clients on that. And that's how I got in the power space. So we advised bidders who were looking to get into, were looking to bid for the assets, because it was a privatization of generation and distribution assets. In the course of that, we supported clients in the bid, and we also then supported a company called Copper Belt Energy out of Zambia, who acquired one of the utilities called Abuja Electricity Distribution Company. Mm. So those were the learning curves, and that was the foundation of my getting into the power sector. And at the time, you know, I would be in a room a lot of the time full of men. But it was very interesting, and I would say that a lot of men gave me opportunities. A lot of the opportunities that we got were given to me by men, you know, and I had men encourage me along the way, including my lead partner, to just stay with, you know, doing power sector work, which is kind of very hard and very complicated work. Mm. But it's been interesting. And years later, on account of the work that we've done in power sector, the Central Bank of Nigeria was going to do an intervention fund for the entire power sector, and we were appointed as one of the advisors on that. Since then, I've advised clients, you know, across a wide spectrum in terms of whether it's privatizations, whether it's project development or project finance, and in renewables, which is renewables and upgrade, which is like the a lot of the future right now. And it was in that process currently or more recently that I was appointed a board advisor for Cowrie, which I see as an interesting journey.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a very interesting company to follow. It's been interesting to hear your story, I suppose it's almost your transformation and the transformation of the Nigerian power sector happened together.
That's right.
And what I wanted to know is, I mean, you've been part of possibly the biggest and most extensive restructuring exercise in Africa. What do you believe that you and your team brought to the table?
Thanks, Claire. I think one of the things, as I said, we had that time to be prepared, because it enabled us, the time we spent working with the regulator, you know, helped us understand the sector and where it was. So we came with that understanding of the regulatory framework, of the legal framework. We also had relationships with stakeholders and the regulator as well, in terms of, you know, because this was like the this was like the biggest, as you said, a very ambitious program, and people who were putting their money needed to be sure what they were doing. So relationships with stakeholders, relationships with regulators were very key to, you know, understanding what it was that was government's intention. And a client like Copperbelt Energy at the time, who hadn't done any business in Nigeria, you know, wanted to really, really understand what they were getting into. I wouldn't say that it was totally successful, because we are still where we are with the problems in the sector. Well, at least we're able to navigate our clients, you know, through and help them understand, you know, the risks that they're going to be taking, what could be done, navigate the framework and how they could do business, you know, in Nigeria. The other thing that we brought to the table is our commercial and pragmatic approach to risk. You know, we're able to play that came to play in negotiations. So one of the things during that privatization process, one of the efforts that was part of was that there was actually a negotiating group. So we actually constituted, all the bidders constituted a negotiating group and had their lawyers join that negotiating group. And we basically were part of the negotiating team, you know, negotiating different aspects of the transaction with government. And that was a good experience, and that was good for our clients. We also brought our project-oriented approach, because it was a transaction that had many, many different moving parts. And you have to have a project-oriented approach to be able to, you know, ensure that you keep an eye on all of those moving parts, and it all comes together. And it was one of the reasons why we were then appointed by the Central Bank to be part of that intervention fund, which was really, really huge as well, because of our project-oriented approach. Yeah, so those were some of the things that we brought.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to have been part of this restructuring and the fact that, you know, as you say, it was incredibly ambitious, and I don't think that necessarily some of the objectives were unrealistic. I mean, I think a lot of the current challenges that the sector is facing at the moment now are very much down to kind of operational and technical issues, as opposed to really the structure of the market. I think that the idea in the beginning was really good. And, you know, it's obviously a market that I think a lot of people are following, because it's really interesting. I think the fact that, you know, the Nigerian government is aware that power is so important, and they're actively trying to fix the situation, makes for a very, I guess, a dynamic landscape as far as the power sector is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right. So the intention was right. The ideals behind why we wanted to do this private sector were germane. Perhaps some things could have been done differently. And, you know, as we've evolved, some things could have come earlier than they have. But, you know, we are where we are. And irrespective of the issues, the fact is that you have the entire distribution sector privatized, you know, to a large extent. Government still holds 40%. There are still those issues there, but it's being run by private hands. There are issues. Government intervention and intervention of concessional financing is still needed, because of the sheer dimensions of the issues that we're facing in the power sector, given the many years of neglect. There is still all that financing hurdle that needs to be crossed. But I think that we're well on our way. I think we're well on our way. So I'd agree with you. Well, progress.
As I say, I mean, I look forward to seeing how that progress evolves, and also to having a chance to go back to Nigeria and Yeah, every time I go back, I'm so constantly amazed at the level of development and growth that is happening in that country. I mean, it's just, it's astounding, actually.
Well, we hope it continues. I'm so glad that you're so optimistic about Nigeria. The fact is that we've been through so much that a lot of people have taken a pessimistic view. I remain optimistic. I'm very hopeful about Nigeria. And it's heartwarming to see that someone who's not Nigerian has that same view as well.
I think I can honestly say that some of the nicest people that I have met on my travels have been Nigerian. Really, I've had such wonderful experiences in your country and met with so much kindness.
That's true.
So yeah, my experiences of Nigeria have been very positive. So I guess my question then, I mean, you mentioned earlier that you are very positive about and very passionate about women. And I wanted to ask you what your take was on the concept of a woman in, particularly as it relates to business, law, engineering. I mean, do you believe that the concept of a woman in is a relevant point, or do you think that we have moved past the fact to draw that we need to draw attention to women in whatever it is?
Well, I think that the concept of a woman in was maybe first about the fact that, okay, there were not so many women, whether in business or in engineering. So a woman being there is the, how would I say, is the unusual. So then is either she's celebrated or, you know, or, well, some kind of focus is on her. But I like to look at it a little bit different about the concept about a woman in, whether it's a woman in energy or a woman in business. And it is from the value perspective. I think my journey about being passionate about women was maybe about, was part of my journey of my own self-discovery journey. And it wasn't from the beginning, you know. It was later on in my career and later on in my life, in my 40s, that I started to do this self-discovery. And I'd like to see the concept of a woman in more from the role of what is the value that the woman brings. And whether it's a woman in energy, whether it's a woman in business, there is a value that you bring that transcends, you know, the organization. So it transcends the fact that women are, you know, basically shattering glass ceilings, which is fantastic, but it also brings value to the organization and the community that she affects. Speaking specifically, you know, and I know that you've probably heard of data where people say that companies with strong female leadership, for example, deliver a higher return on equity. And you'd have seen from global trends that more people are looking for women, you know, more companies, more organizations are looking to have more women in terms of leadership because there's a value that they bring. It's also been shown that women in more senior positions, you know, are more socially responsible. Safety and quality, you know, is more important to them. I think there's actually a study by McKinsey where it says women leaders tend to use, you know, 5 of the 9 most important leadership behaviors. You know, there are many things. There are many. Right now, a lot of information out there about the value that women bring. You know, it has a positive influence on social motivations and achievement organizations. So I like to look at a woman being in from the value that we bring. And I think that that's, so I like to see myself as being a woman in business and a woman in energy to bring that value to my organization and to bring that value to the community around me, including bringing that value to, for example, Nigeria, you know, as a nation. So that's how I see the relevance of a woman in.
So with that in mind, I mean, what do you believe your role is as a leader in the energy sector? I mean, how do you see your role as it relates to other women?
So a number of things. First, as a transactions lawyer, I see my role is to help shape the legal, regulatory, and commercial landscape for energy companies to do business in Nigeria and across Africa. And this is for the businesses, and as well as in terms of how government engaging regulators, engaging stakeholders as well, to ensure that we have a power sector that, you know, can be investor friendly and one, you know, that can grow and develop and where businesses can indeed thrive. So that is one as a transactions lawyer. I've also talked about my passion to see energy access at all levels. We all know that the lack of energy access as we have across Africa and Nigeria, women and children who are more in the more vulnerable line, you know, are most affected. And being a woman leader in that space, it's imperative that with whatever I do, I have that in mind, that we need to increase energy access at all levels, you know, through viable and scalable business models. The other role that I think that I know that I should have is to also inspire, impact, and mentor younger professionals, younger lawyers in the energy sector. You know, it's very important for people to be able to see light. And sometimes some people are fortunate to come in contact with you and, you know, you give them that opportunity to, you know, be able to see how things are done and to be able to evolve as well. And of course, lastly, to encourage and mentor more women to take up roles in the energy sector, as well as not only just taking up roles in the energy sector now, but because of the impact that women have and because of the value that they bring to organizations, we need to create a pipeline for more women to take up leadership roles. So it's not just about us having female engineers, which is great, or about us having more female energy experts, which is fantastic, but it's about them also growing into leadership as well. And it's for one of these many reasons that I took this board advisory role at Cowry.
So, I mean, what would the message be that you would like to share to other young women that are either wanting to get into the power sector or are perhaps considering a shift into power? What would your message to them be?
I would say take the opportunities. I by my foray into the power sector was just seeing the opportunities and taking them. But it was, of course, I had a lot of support in that, you know, but it also takes persistence and focus. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to set out in terms of at least having some kind of setting out some kind of plan of what it is that you want to achieve. It may not be a long range plan because you may not be able to see further, but as far as you can see, you know, take those steps, take the opportunities. And I'd like to say that the time is now. More than ever before, there's a huge push, you know, for more women, you know, to be active in the energy sector, to be active in other sectors and other spaces, you know. The time is now. And there seems to be so much going on around encouraging women to take these opportunities than they've ever been. So I would say, take the opportunity, see what's out there, you know, and be persistent and focused.
I like that. So you mentioned earlier that you, in addition to your day job, you are a member of the board for Cowry Energy, but you're also a wife and a mother. And so, I mean, how do you manage the whole work-life balance, and what do you do for yourself in your downtime? I mean, how do you recharge your own batteries?
Thanks, Claire. That's a Yeah, an interesting question.
The one I think everybody battles with. It's like, yes. I don't know.
Yes. And you know, when I was younger, it was even harder. But I think I've come to a place now where, you've just got to prioritize things. You've just got to prioritize what is important. There were times in my life when I didn't really have control of those reins, and maybe I didn't quite know how to do it. But I've learned to take one day at a time and to prioritize what matters. In terms of downtime, it's an interesting question how much downtime you have, because you have your career, you have your responsibilities, you know, you have things that you're involved in. Because apart from what I do at detail, there's also what I do at Carry. And what I do at detail is multifaceted. It is attending to clients, it is mentoring people, it is taking care of the finances of the firm, it is managing the firm. And then when you come away from all that, then you come home and manage the children, deal with education, your relationship with your husband, you know, family. I know that's the role of women as well. You also have extended family that you have to take care of. I'm still blessed to have parents and a mother-in-law. And you still have to deal with all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, so in terms of downtime, I would say I don't have much of that. But how do I spend my downtime? I've learned to kind of use that and utilize the little downtime I have a lot. One is to spend time with family, particularly spend time with my children. And lately, I've learned how to also spend time developing myself. And I found that the older you get, and because you need to give out more, you need to spend time developing yourself, and also, for me, it's spiritual, and for me, it's spiritual, and it's from a knowledge perspective and a spiritual perspective. I need to have that, would I say, inner peace that allows me be that person that can give out to others. So my wellness is important, my mental wellness, my spiritual wellness is important. So I've learned to also take care of myself in that way and spend time doing that. And that plays in my daily routines. It plays in how much time I spend alone, spend exercising and all of that for wellness. I also do the occasional spa day to treat myself. I used to play amateur golf, and I'd love to do that more when I have the time, because it's a very jealous sport. And I love to travel for leisure.
Well, I think travel is always an incredible way to it broadens your horizons without you even realizing that it's broadening horizons. But very often, because you're trying to make the most of the time that you have when you're traveling, you come back from a trip and you actually need a vacation just to recover from your travel.
I know. So what I try to do is do trips where I'm not shopping. Where it's a rest trip, and I am just taking in and just resting.
Yeah, we went away just recently for Women's Day in South Africa, and we went to Cape Agulhas, which is the southernmost tip of Africa, and there was no internet there. And it was amazing, because you know what? Then you are really forced to...
That's right.
To do something else. And so mm-hmm. I read and I painted and I hung out with my daughter and I went down to the beach with my husband, and it was lovely. Mm-hmm. It was really restful. Of course, then you get back to real life and you kind of think,
and you say, where did that all go?
Yeah, exactly. You're thinking, should I actually have taken those days? Because now I'm so far behind. But I mean, that is life, isn't it? But yeah, I think sometimes also getting away from all of the distractions that we have in daily life is really important.
It is.
So if I could ask then, who is your inspiration?
So I mentioned that my spiritual wellness is very important. So I'm Christian. And I would say that my major inspiration is God and God's word. And that forms the foundation for every other thing in my life. It forms the basis for other things that inspire me. In terms of people, I think one of the people that inspire me are my parents, because they gave me that foundation of the value of hard work and persistence. And it was not so much in the things they said, but it was how they lived their lives. And just looking back, I just saw from just watching them and how they lived their lives, you know, that a lot was impacted on me and how and my journey, you know. So that's in terms of people. But I've also, because the foundation of my inspiration is God, I've also had learning experiences and relationships at different parts of my life and at different milestones where I've had people inspire me on the journey. Something else that inspires me is seeing people actually evolve. So seeing people that you met who had potential and working with them, you know, and being part of their journey to grow, you know, into their God-given potential, that inspires me, because it shows me that nothing is impossible when you put your heart to it. One of the things that also inspires me is seeing projects that we just start thinking about that are just on paper, actually see them go live and become real, you know, where it starts from a conversation, it starts from a document, and you see it actually grow, become brick and mortar, and actually see it affect people's lives. And I think that is one of the reasons why this journey for energy access across Africa is very real to me, and it's a dream that I want to pursue.
Yeah, I think if you haven't if you haven't actually appreciated the transformative power of energy, you know, when you're in that position where you see how access to power changes people's lives, like literally changes their lives, you realize just how powerful the sector is that you are spending time in and working in. And it I suppose it also helps kind of keep that motivation going when you see that you actually do have the ability to completely change the direction of somebody's life. So then if I could ask, what book are you reading and what lessons are you taking from it? Or what is your favorite book and why?
So I'll talk about what books I'm reading. So I'm one of those people who are reading different books for different reasons and hopefully hopes to finish the books. So currently I'm reading Women and Leadership by Julia Gillard and Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. And what I'm learning about from phenomenal stories about women who have shattered glass ceilings and cliffs, you know, and I think this is just helping me in my self-discovery journey. I'm also reading a book that is direct opposite, that is called Billion Dollar Brand Club. It's by Lawrence Ingracia. I was introduced to that book in the course of a CEO group that I joined. And it basically talks about how innovative, you know, customer retail models are disrupting the way customers buy products and services. And I guess what I'm learning from that book is more around business models and how to think about how to understand or understanding how customers, you know, are responding, you know, right now, you know, to marketing in that sense. So that's something that is interesting for me, innovation and innovation in business, because it runs through my life as a business lawyer, it runs through my life as, you know, an energy enthusiast and looking at what kind of models, you know, can work for energy access. So yeah, those are two books I'm reading.
They sound interesting. I think I'll have to check them out.
Yes, you should.
And then just the last question, and that is really, what is the takeaway that you would like our listeners to have from our conversation today?
Life is a journey. And at every step and milestone, there will be opportunities. Be aware and take them as they come. Value relationships. Never burn bridges. Because you never know where it takes you. Mm-hmm. Every relationship has a purpose. But most of all, dare to dream.
Dilapo, thank you so much for sharing your journey, your insights, and I guess just some of the things that have resulted in you being where you are. And you know, we look forward to touching base with you again, and also obviously to following with great interest the journey that the Nigerian power sector is on.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, and I'm really privileged to have been part of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on this Enlit Africa podcast. This episode is brought to you in partnership with ESI Africa. For more podcasts, you can visit the Enlit Africa website at enlit-africa.com or visit the ESI Africa website, esi-africa.com. Be sure to tune in again for more conversations and insights into the things that really matter to Africa's energy industry. Until next time, I'm Claire Falkveen, and you've been listening to the Women in Energy podcast.